Hey, everybody. Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. Really good to be with you. And we're going to ask you, hey, share this show. A lot of our shows here go out on digital. And sometimes, and they're on the radio networks, they go archive, which end up being digital in an MP3 format. So we would ask that you would share this because there are so many people that don't know what's going on. And this government is massively lying to you. Ted Cruz really did a good job. He and John Cornyn in a Senate briefing where they went public and they talked about their experiences when they went to the border and they exposed so many Biden and Mayorkas lies. People need to hear. They don't know because the mainstream media covers for the liars running our government. So please share. Hey, we've got a great guest for you today. He's been on before. He's written 7-part series. His name is Chad Stewart. And this Britfield series is unbelievably good because it introduces kids to all the crap that is taking away our freedoms, but does it in a childlike manner. It's incredible how he weaves this in. And it's acclaimed even in the mainstream media because they're not picking up on that part. But this promises to reshape our kids' minds. Listen to me. This can reshape our kids' minds to a healthy, family-friendly, spiritual connection with the world, with their family, with themselves. This series is going to take the world by storm, but it is the sane version of Harry Potter. It ain't no wave a magic wand and invoke witchcraft. But it's going to have the same impact. It's already signed up for movies. I bet it ends up being a TV series. It's a 7-part series, and I can't wait to interview Chad about that. But before we go to Chad, I need to let you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know that our economy is in trouble. You know the petrodollar is dead. You know that this economy is one day going to collapse, and the banks under the Dodd-Frank law can keep your money. And I say, don't let them do it. Don't give them the opportunity. Your retirement, you can't replace that. So what do you need to do? Get it out of the bank. Get it under your control. Back it with the precious metals. Noble Gold can do that, and they can't touch it. You leave it in there, they'll keep it to soften their fall when the banks begin to collapse. Additionally, on the other side, you've got bank accounts to worry about. Same deal. Diversify, 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 and only leave operating capital in there for the very same reason. So I just really implore you right now, let me send you a free information packet, DaveHodgesGold.com. That's DaveHodgesGold.com. Or if you feel the urgency of the hour, call 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. Hey, listen to me. This is going to be a great interview. You're going to love this. It's not just a literature about literature books. It's about life and the challenges we're facing. Stay tuned. Hey, welcome to the guest segment of The Common Sense Show, where we're freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. Really good to be with you. And we have Chad Stewart with us, and Chad's been on before, and we talked about his launch of the Britfield and the Lost Crown series, which is going to grow to 7. And I had said to Chad in our pre-air conversation, what's coming kind of reminds me of the way Harry Potter took the world by storm in the entertainment world, but the material is a whole lot different. In fact, I want to stress this is healthy stuff for kids. This is very healthy. It's uplifting. It's not the CRT, let's make kids hate each other, let's teach kids age-inappropriate things. That's not what this is about. This is something that parents can rest assured that you'd be happy to bring this into your home and have your kids exposed to it. And the good news is they're going to be on the big screen before much longer. Chad, really good to have you back on the show. I'm excited for your success. We need more projects like this that uplift kids instead of putting them in chains and turning them into monsters that hate each other.
Yeah, I agree. And thank you, Dave. It's great to be back on your show. And it is interesting how many people have sort of hooked their wagon to this ideology. And I'm not saying the masses. I'm talking about writers out there. And it's like they think the only way to have a good book now is to have the magic or the witchcraft or the demigods. And they're trying to think of some new mysticism. I'm thinking, just write great stories. You know what I mean? Like now, present time. And And that's what's kind of fun about the series. You know, it's like it takes place in present time England right now. Everything's accurate, everything's authentic, and then it travels the world as we, you know, go to book two and three and four. And I'm writing book four now, Britfield and the Eastern Empire and stuff. So I say that to encourage more people out there that there is a huge gap in the industry. I'd say about 85% gap for high quality, family friendly, good, edifying content. You cannot write enough. You cannot make enough films, movies, television programs to fill that gap. People aren't buying this crap. They aren't. And
No,
it's
they're
and
not.
the masses aren't. They always might make you want to think it. Like, this is the popular thing right now. Says the $1 trillion, you know, five industries that own 96% of the industry or the media, right? No, it isn't. People don't like this crap. They want good family. What real mother or father out there that love their kids want this crap? None of them do. So get that out of your mind. And so start producing great content. And in a sense, like as you were talking, we've just kind of ignored all that. You know, people like will say, well, what do you think about what's going on here and this and that? I don't think anything of it. I think it's disgusting. I think it's filthy. And I think those that are behind it will pay a very deep price. They're not going to get away with it. But I don't focus on it. I focus on great content. It's funny when I was in banking, I started out as a teller. And the first thing you do is they work you with real money, not the counterfeit. You know what I mean? And so by the time you get the counterfeit stuff, you know the difference. And I've always felt that right now, you know, all this other stuff out there is just counterfeit. You know what I mean? And if you stick to the good stuff, good content, good quality content, then you know, it'll feed the soul.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And kids today are starved for healthy outlets.
They are.
I just look at what we teach our kids today, and I've gotten to be very well acquainted with Sharona Bishop. She had the FBI kick in her door. She was in the Dinesh D'Souza's movie,
All right.
the recent movie that just came out on Police State. And she went to a school board meeting and says, "I don't want my kids taught this stuff." And for her trouble, she had her door kicked in. She didn't do anything wrong. She didn't cuss anybody, didn't yell at anybody. She's a very calm person. And she's actually turned this into activity. But parents feel this way all over the country.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that the people in entertainment today are trying to meet the public's needs. I think they're trying to shape the public psychology.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And it's always been like that. That's why I was doing a couple of interviews the last couple of weeks, and that's what I was saying, that Hollywood exists for the agenda. And the entire movie, you might be watching this great movie, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, good actors, it's got a great story, and then boom, here comes the agenda, or here comes the profanity, or here comes the nudity. None of it needed, but you have to understand the entire movie exists for that one bit of agenda, or for that one nude scene, or for the profanity, because all they're trying to do is numb you down. It's the frog in the hot water, little by little, and it's
There you
like
go.
television shows. I was watching a new one on Amazon about everyone loves diamonds, and it's about this diamond heist, you know, in Amsterdam or Belgium. And it's like, you know, it's kind of interesting, and it's subtitles, and although they have the English and stuff. And then I think it was the third or fourth episode, here comes this weird background of nude sexual stuff, and I'm like, what in the freaking world? You know, and again, thank you, Amazon. You failed. Just like Netflix. I don't trust anything that net if it has the Netflix in on it and they've developed it, I don't watch it anymore. I don't trust anything that they do. They are so far off the reservation, and it's just crap. But all of these things exist for, just like what you said, for that agenda, for that content, to just get you used to it. And you'll say, well, you know, it's okay. Or, yeah, the show's really good, though. Yeah, they have a little bit of that, but in stuff. And that's what they want, little by little,
No,
right?
I'm not accepting a little bit of that. You know,
Yeah.
what's interesting is the Marvel series. I love the Marvel series when it
Sure.
came out. Now, if you go to a Marvel movie, you're just waiting for the bomb to drop.
Yep.
It's
Yeah.
going to happen. It's going to happen somewhere in this, and it just and I don't think I've ever seen in history. Well, the Bolshevik Communist Revolution was one, but other than that, there hasn't been many times in history where such a small minority of people have been able to enforce their views on other people. I mean, not just be who they are, but I mean, make you worship what they are. And that
Yeah.
it just it's over the top.
Although,
Well, what
real quick, I have a
along
point
these
to make.
lines, I think I know, but what motivated you to write Britfield and the Lost Crown series?
Yeah, it's interesting. It started 12 years ago. I'm originally from Newport Beach, California. I was back east, Wellesley, Massachusetts, for 16 years, if you can imagine. It was quite a bit of life. And did my undergraduate in British literature, European history, and was in investment banking of all things, and I was on the dark side, if you will. But it wasn't, you know. I, but it's funny to say that now. And I was sent down to this seminar, you know, in Providence, Rhode Island, and I was just bored. I think it was insurance, and I started to doodle, and I doodled this circle with three lines: basket, boy and a girl. And I wrote the boy in the balloon, and that's when it started. And it was just, oh, this whole story came to me, you know, about this orphan Tom, 12 years old, takes place up in Yorkshire, Northern England. And so I sat down, and literally 4 years and 2,500 hours later, I wrote Richfield and Lost Crown, you know, 384-page book. And then from concept to launching it officially, it was 10 years and 10 long years and 10 years of hard work, probably 10,000 hours. And I've said this before, and I know you're very aware of it, but, you know, really the difference between a hobby and a profession is 8 to 10,000 hours. We live in this kind of flashover substance society where it's, I want it now, or, you know, it's like, and you see it again, everything from Hollywood, everything mainstream media. And there's no difference between mainstream media and Hollywood. That's what people need to realize. No difference at all. Those are not journalists. Those are actors that are hired to play the role of a journalist or a reporter. And all that stuff is scripted. They all get their talking points at 4 a.m. in the morning, and they're all agenda stories, and it's all crap. All of it. I have not looked at a normal newspaper probably for 5 or 6 years. Why? I get my information from people like you that are doing your job and that are honest and can provide good content. So, and so that's kind of how it started. And it was interesting while I was writing it. I mean, what do I know about young adult, you know, or middle school fiction? And so I'll never forget walking in to the Barnes and Noble. And again, I don't have kids. And so, you know, like normally if you had kids, you'd be used to this. And I started looking at the shelves, and I think that was my aha moment. That this was more than a book. It was a mission, if you will, and a movement, because I was startled by the content that was on the bookshelves. I mean, everywhere. I mean, everything was witchcraft. Everything was demigods and vampires and occultism and, you know, superheroes. And it's like everything was like a disconnect from reality, you know, and we want, you know, and they're just dumping it on the kids today. And it's sad. And it's, and don't get me wrong. I grew up with Star Wars and I loved that. And there's some good content. There's some fun stuff out there. I mean, Narnia, you know what I mean? Who doesn't love The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? But again, you know, mystical world, you know, magic is introduced. Even Tolkien with Lord of the Rings. Epic stories, don't get me wrong. But I think that to create a story like the Britfield series that is as authentic and real as possible has been part of the incredible success that we've had. I mean, we're in the top 1% of all books that have ever been published within the same time frame. We're working on the first of 7 movies. We'll be launching book 4 next year. We launched the theatrical play this February globally. We turned book 1 into a 2-act mm-hmm. theatrical play, 90 minutes for elementary and middle schools, trying to bring good content back mm-hmm. into theater programs. And so kids love it. And we get letters like from around the world. I kid you not. And I could read just a few quick quotes if we have time, but because the kids are connecting with it. You know, they'll never connect with solving problems by saying a spell or waving a wand. And that's what they want. That's what they're trying to sort of, you know, indoctrinate kids into, or that they're not happy with being themselves. And I wish I was a superhero. Yet God's made us all incredible, all individual. We all born with creativity. We all have great gifts. If we can find the time to realize those gifts, and it takes time to nurture things of quality. You know, it took me 10 years, millions of dollars to launch Britfield and the Lost Crown. And it's been trial and error, and it's been a hard, long road. And everything we've done in the last 4 years has been really a soft launch. Next year, 2024, is when we go global. So
that's an incredible success story. Give us a teaser here. Your central plot, your storyline, what does it center around?
Yeah, so it's fun. So book 1 takes place in England, present time. Starts up in Yorkshire at this horrible orphanage called Weatherly Orphanage. Tom's been an orphan his whole life. He's 12 years old, and he's been at Weatherly for 6 years. And I love it. Like the first 2 pages, it says, "This is the year I escape." You know what I mean? You kind of set that pace. And what's fun about it is, you know, he eventually escapes with his best friend, Sarah, who's also 12. But he's relentlessly chased by this illustrious detective, Gowerstone. Gowerstone's based a little bit on Sherlock Holmes and a little bit of James Bond. Very cool, very sophisticated. And you're wondering through the story, why is this guy so obsessed with finding this child? And there's this royal mystery of Britfield. And what's fun about it is really in book 2, Britfield and the Rise of the Lion, book 3, Britfield and the Return of the Prince. And you'll appreciate this, Dave, is that I've been doing my research for 12 years and relearning history a lot because of your show and the Hagman Report. Steve Quayle, I mean, he totally woke me up. And so, it's kind of like twofold. On one side, I'm reading all this stuff, relearning history, and blown away by like how deceived I've been. And on the other side, I'm writing this series. And so it's funny because it fits in. And in book two is like my Empire Strikes Back. I mean, it's like we pull the curtain and it's like, who are the Britfield and what was the real royal Britfield family that were supposed to, rule England? And they come from sort of a godly background. You know what I mean? They weren't about oppressing the people, but enlightening them, you know what I mean? And providing land so they could grow and education and not steal from taxes. And so, starting with the Tudors and then the Stuarts and then finally the Windsors, the Britfields were usurped. And so it's like you got this really great, interesting royal mystery with real history tied in. And then, in book two, I start to expose more of this group called the Committee, based on obviously the Committee of 300, behind the scenes. And I talk about secret societies. I talk about these fake organizations. We introduce a lot of current issues right now. Like in book two, we talk a little bit about transhumanism, and we get into super soldiers. We get into the
Oh my
different.
goodness.
I mean, it's threaded. You know what I mean? It's not like bulked on you because it's a fast-paced story with Tom and Sarah, and they're just trying to find their family. Tom's trying to find his family, the Britfields, and they're now in France. But it works if that makes sense, and it's threaded through. And then in book three, we get into technology and how social media and all that's set up to collect your information, and how their ultimate goal with a D-Wave computer out of Switzerland is to pull all people's information together. And finally, comes to this great crescendo in Venice. And now with book four, I'm introducing digital currency, one world monetary system. And so it's a thread that goes through these books, but it's not what these books are about, if that makes sense. But I can't help to write it because the books are as authentic as possible. And I'm introducing kids and adults. 55% of our reading audience are adults. I'm introducing them to these things. I've had people come back and say like, whoa, and even young kids, it's really cool. I surprised this, some of my investors know a family here in San Diego, and they contacted me and said, their daughter Ava is turning 13 in a couple of weeks. Is there any way that you could surprise her for her birthday, for lunch? You're her favorite author. She loves the Britfield series. They've gone to France and Italy and visited some of the locations. And I thought, very cool. And so, I met her and she was just blown away. And we talked for about 2.5 hours. With her family over lunch. It was really cool. But she's like into this stuff. Like she's like, oh yeah, like the committee. And it's like, it's little by little, if you will, I'm waking them up with the truth. I'm not only providing a great book based on family, friendship, loyalty, and courage. I'm also interweaving creativity, critical thinking, communication, collaboration, and kids that are reading it are learning about history, geography, art, architecture, and culture, all within every single book. And so we like to call it stealth
Yeah.
education,
What
and
you're
we're educating kids. Yeah, go ahead.
what you're doing here, this is absolutely incredible. What you're doing, Chad, is you're avoiding labels like right-wing extremist, but
Sure.
still able to talk about some of the same things I talk about. Wow, that's what a clever plot. You know what it is? I'll speak to you as a psychologist for a second.
Great.
With the label the CIA came up with in 1967 to take people
Sure.
away from looking at the Kennedy assassination, you're a conspiracy theorist,
Yeah.
and now you're a disinfo person. I mean, it's kind of morphed into that. But when we look at that created perceptual defense in people, and perceptual
Sure.
defense is something that's conditioned in us. It's like when you're hypnotized, you won't do something against your will. Perceptual defense, but it becomes ingrained in us, conditioned in us, to accept anything that is not necessarily for the government or for the establishment, that, oh, that's a conspiracy theory, we shouldn't take it seriously. But by putting it into a fictional series, you bypass perceptual defense. I don't know if you're aware of that or not.
I like the way that you had stated it. Absolutely, because I'm under the cloak of fiction. You know what I mean? And but it's funny too, because like everyone that's read it has loved it. But every now and then you'll get like some people who are saying, "Oh my gosh, this is crazy!" Like the stuff that's in there, and I'm like, "Well, actually, it's not." I never respond, but I'm saying it's actually true. But it is a book called fiction. You know what I mean? But it's like everything that's in there. It's like it's just because so many people
Have you done any mainstream media interviews?
No, we're looking at one in Fox in New York through my agent right now, and that will come eventually. I'm not really concerned about it. I'm not focused on it. I think as the movie starts to ease in next year, we'll probably be doing some, but I will be selective. I'm not on there to debate anybody. That's why I like coming on shows like yours. I'm not here to be defensive. I'm not
Oh,
here.
yeah.
What about this? Or you said this? Or what do you think about this? Or what do you think about Trump? And blah blah. I'm not here politically. I'm an
Yeah, but
author
you
that's
got the
doing this.
perfect out. You've got
Yeah,
the
yeah.
perfect. Hey, you know, there's some elements in here that people that engage in disinfo talk about. It's fiction. It's
Yeah,
just part
yeah.
of the fiction story,
Hey,
you
it's
know,
just a
and
fun
that
story.
would really negate a lot of the criticism you might get in the mainstream media.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know what I mean? We're thinking about it, and I've done over like 200 interviews, which has been great. Nationally, even some global interviews, and again, everything from podcasts to radio to television, but nothing that sort of that level of mainstream yet. And we'll get there, and but it will be select. You know, it'll be with the right people. I'm not there to talk about any because you know how they set it up or how they use it or what, you know, and they're all trained in that area and stuff. And it has nothing to do with me. I'm there to inspire people. And really, like with your interview right now, I'm here not just to promote my book series, you know, because I've already done that across the world. But I'm really here just really honestly to inspire people. I think we're in an age right now where there's so much negativity going on. And I've said this before, and you know the quote very well by William Casey, but he goes, "We know our," he was the director of the CIA, and he says, "We know our job will be done when everything the American people believe is a lie." And that just blows me away. I mean, like, can you imagine that's your mantra? It's like I exist and my goal is to make sure that everything the American people believe is a lie. And I think in some ways we're at that period of time. I think they've succeeded on one end, but on the other end, I think we are the most enlightened society, especially since 2020, in the history of humanity. That would be my defense. I think for the first time, people are starting to see the cracks in the dam, if you will. They're starting to pull the curtain, they're starting to question things, and we have millions and millions of people that say, enough. And I think a lot of it, and I said this to you on I think on your earlier show, but when we launched the book in 2019, I went on a national school tour, and I drove 9,000 miles. I visited 23 states, and I was in Arizona. I did about 15 schools in Arizona, which was fun, and 200 schools to over 40,000 students. I was in Memphis, Tennessee in March 2020, and I had to stop and drive all the way back. You know, and I was like finally in the heart of America. But as I was driving back, I was saying to my friends, I'm saying, you know, it'd be interesting to see when this whole nonsense is over, how many parents will send their kids back to school. And they'd say, why? And I'd say, I'm basing it on three things. Number one, for the first time, parents will see what their kids are being exposed to or taught in school, and they will be horrified. And you've heard that backlash for the last 2.5 years. Number two, how far behind their students are, or their children are in certain subjects that they shouldn't be. And number three, if they sat down and worked on their homework, that, you know, within 2 to 3 hours, they're done for the entire day and they can spend the rest of their time, I don't know what, playing, having fun growing up, being 10 years old, instead of being in these institutions for 40 hours, a week, 5 days a week. I mean, just ridiculous. Your only qualification to be in that classroom is that you're 12 years old, right? And so I think because of it, I mean, I think millions and millions and millions of parents have woken up. You're seeing that, you know, with these videos of standing up to the school boards, probably for the first time, and they hate that. They hate to be challenged. So challenge them, hammer them, do whatever you need to do to get them physically removed from the offices that they're in, because they're going to keep pushing and promoting this garbage and this crap because that's their agenda. They're either being paid to do it or they're being threatened to do it. But to sit there and say that there's an actual human being out there that wants to bring this disgusting, vile filth into the classroom and expose 5 years olds to it, I wouldn't define that as a human being. That's a demon. You know what I mean? I can't believe that there's real, honest Americans, right? So they're either just caught up in it. They're promised something. They're bribed, blackmailed, or paid, and get them out of there. And
I would agree. I'd agree that.
they hate to be challenged. Hammer them, hammer them, hammer them. And there's thousands of videos out there if you can find them, right? All we see is the mainstream flashover substance nonsense. They're telling us what's important, right? I think it's very interesting. I've been thinking about this for the last couple of weeks. The very existence of the newspaper is an organization that's putting out content telling you, Dave Hodges, this is what you need to read today. This is what's important. And because we're covering the stories that you need to know. You know, it was funny too, like even in, I don't read it, but sometimes you catch the glance of the front cover. And it was like, I think it was like a week ago. It was like the San, because I'm in San Diego, the San Diego Tribune or something. And they had all these fires. And they said, remember what happened last year? And I just, my first impression was like, that's what you're covering with? Like fires that we had in San Diego a year ago, like just to panic people and remember that fear of the fires? Frankly, all self-lit. You know what I mean? But it's just like they don't have the capacity or the ability to actually tell you good stuff. And so I like to come on shows like this to try to encourage people to let them know that there is millions and millions and millions of people out there that are woken up, that are fighting the good fight, that love their kids, that are pulling them out of these traditional institutions. We've gone from 5 million to 15 million homeschoolers in the last 2.5 years and
That's true.
growing. United States,
That's
and that's
true.
extraordinary. We've got over 1,000 charter systems or schools just in California. And I'm not saying that's the end all, but it's a lot better than the public. And what does that tell you? So.
No, I totally agree with you. I think when I look at what you're doing here, you're countering my concern. In fact, let me just tell you about a live stream I did last night. I talked about Gen Z. And people are asking me, Dave, are we going to have a revolution? Are we going to have a civil war? And I said, okay, we can answer that in a number of ways, but let's just take the hypothesis that we will. I said, what would that look like? And I said, a lot of people say that the Gen Z will have nothing to do with it because they've been trained to be Marxist communists. And I'm saying, yeah, but poverty is poverty. And what inspires revolution are people that don't have enough to eat. And they're usually young people that end up starting stuff like this. It's not the older people. And the old people might finance it some, but the younger people are the foot soldiers. And what's interesting about what you're doing is we may not have to get to that point if we had more work like this, because what I feel that you're looking at here is that you're doing a counter conditioning of what kids are getting in the school.
There
I mean, we're producing Marxist socialist young kids that think that all capitalism is evil. And I think that what you're doing here is really good. I wish there were 100 more of you.
I agree, and I say this to encourage people because we don't really have any competition per se. And it's like, well, what if someone takes your ideas? And I'm like, take my ideas, write a great series, push it out there. We can't get enough good content out there. And you're right about that. And I've always said, like, the Britfield series is like right now, what's in the industry is like McDonald's, right? And it's like, it smells good and it kind of tastes good, And then, but when you're done reading it, it really doesn't feed your mind. It doesn't feed your soul. You don't really learn anything from it. And you kind of feel like crap, just like you feel after, a McDonald's meal, honestly. And what we're doing with the Britfield series is offering like, fresh vegetables and fruit and meat and salad and, just like a good meal. And when kids eat that, it like you said, it reconditions their mind and their body of a higher level of what literature should be. So now when they go back to the Harry Potters, it doesn't stick as much. You know what I mean? It does. It's kind of like I was thinking about this like last month. I was thinking like, because I think a couple of the Harry Potter movies are always on television. So like I was flipping through and caught it for like 5 or 10 minutes. And I just kind of started to see it looking very silly. You know what I mean? Like I get the excitement of it and all that. But I'm like, Tom and Sarah didn't have a wand. And yet they got out of this situation, or they were chased and they used their mind and talked about it and they hid and helped them along the way. And it's like everything in these books is as authentic and real as possible. And it makes all this other stuff kind of look a little bit silly, you know?
I'm going to speak to the psychologist again. What the
Yeah.
difference between your series and whether you're describing it and what Harry Potter does, and I've only seen a little of Harry Potter, but enough to know that you wave the wand, that's nothing to do with your own creativity, your own level of resilience,
No.
how you handle challenges, how you bounce back from setbacks. And what you're doing is real people solving real problems using the tools they have available to them, as opposed to waving a wand. This conditions helplessness. The Harry Potter
Yes.
series, and I've said this before, it conditions kids to be helpless, not to rely on their own inner strength or seek out role models that they can imitate to solve problems.
Sure. I love that. And that's a great analogy. And exactly what we're doing. I'm giving examples of kids using critical thinking, communication, collaboration, and creativity in every single book. And sometimes Tom, it's not like Tom and Sarah's always know what to do or have the right answer. You know what I mean? It's like book three is kind of
Well,
funny because
I have
they're now
said,
14.
I said, Chad, that the mainstream media, I mean, okay, if you look at your typical sitcom, actually had my students when I was teaching at a local university. I had a project for them. I said, but it was a class in social psychology. So we were looking at behavior modification as a conditioning tool. And I said, I want you to pick a sitcom and analyze it to, you know, the majority of this course and write your conclusions on things like empowerment, resilience, and so forth. And it was incredible because about 90% of the work that came back to me, these students, what they said was, we are trained to get almost to the level of success and then self-sabotage. That was one theme that came out. The other theme that came out was that, oh, that goal is way beyond me. I could never be that, do that, and so forth. So
interesting.
There's a lack of self-efficacy that people have. And I got to tell you, it really awakened me that my suspicions were correct about the mainstream media and what it does. And if you look at the news, and I did my own analysis on the news, and then I reported on it, about 94% of the news stories are negative in some fashion.
Sure. Sure.
And it conditions you. You live in an unsafe world, but there are these people up there that will take care of you. And I don't mean up there. I mean over there. I mean over there in D.C., yeah, and so that was another conclusion I came to. So there is this use of the media to propagandize people into being less than they are, easier to control, and rely just on the government. And we're seeing that today in spades.
It's true, and that's a great analogy. And I would have loved to have taken your class. And you're an awesome teacher. I mean that. I used to teach college too, and it's like, but I just didn't have the gumption, the gift of it. But what a great class. And it's true, isn't it? It's I think we've been, as a nation, we've been victimized, and we're now victims. And it's in the simplest ways. It's like, oh, I have an allergy. You know what I mean? Or, oh, I can't eat that. You know, it's just the simplest thing, but it's like, oh, I have this, or I have this condition. You know, it's like the whole, what is it? AAD, was it the
ADHD?
Yeah. I mean, that's made up. That doesn't exist. That
was, it's a bunch of crap. Here's what I tell parents. Oh, a kid has ADHD. He can't focus on anything. What does he like to do? Video games. How long does he play them? Hours. He doesn't have ADHD. If he can focus that long on one thing, I don't care what it is. It is not ADHD.
Yeah. Or what's his diet? And what kind of fruit toast and corn syrup and garbage and crap are you feeding him? You know, how often is he outside? What's, you know, is he involved in sports? That whole, and I'm sorry for parents out there, because it's like, and again, it's the victimized. It's like, well, he's got this condition. We got him on these drugs. Are you kidding me? I mean, 98% of kids shouldn't be on anything, but, you know, healthy exercise and a good diet and homeschooling.
Well, you know, at my age, I'm developing some conditions.
Sure.
And so I'm going to brag for a second. Last night in the gym, I did 30 minutes on the heavy bag. I ran 16 sprints the length of a basketball court, and I lifted weights. So much for the conditions excuse. I get so sick of hearing that. We're producing a bunch of cream puffs in our society.
Yeah, I know. I you know, I listened to Dr. Ted Brower, and I know you.
Good friend of mine. Yeah, good friend of mine.
And he's awesome. And I learned so much from his program, and I have his protocols. I'm doing the immune protocol now. And we talked about this before. I remember you had, it was problems with your joints. And of course the doctor wanted surgery. Everybody wants surgery.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, I've not physically been to a doctor, and praise God, but 5 to 6 years physically, I've not been to a doctor.
Yeah. Ted said, give me 2 weeks. Cause I had a partially torn meniscus and they wanted to cut it. And I said, okay, I'll put it off.
Yeah.
And 10 days later, I was walking without a limp. And I said, I'm not getting surgery. And I said, what am I going to get surgery for? Right? Because I got it scheduled. No, I'm not doing it. So he named a joint protocol after me on his website. I know. But and see, this is the thing we're really talking about here. What empowers our kids?
Yeah.
And what we're doing in our schools, not all our schools. There's not all schools are like this. I know schools that function at a high level.
Sure.
And a lot of our schools, our kids are being taught, you'll submit to everything we do. You might be 5 years old and COVID's no threat to you, but you're going to wear a mask because we say so.
Sure. Yeah. That was horrific too. And coming back full circle, what you're saying, it's like about the conditioning and where we are as a society. We saw that in 2020. And I got to admit, I was blown away by how many people like drank that Kool-Aid and took it hook, line, and sinker. I mean, literally, like I'm in an affluent area, and it's like you have these multimillionaires that are running global corporations, walking their dog, wearing a mask, or driving in their car with a diaper on their face. And I will never do business with anyone like that. I mean, it's, as far as I'm concerned, you just outed yourself as being an idiot, you know? Sorry. Sorry to be harsh, but that did blow me away. I mean, across the board, you know what I mean? And it's like, and they're effective. You're looking at a very well fine-tuned machine, multi-trillion dollar machine, our money, trillion dollar machine that's been built over the last 50 to 100 years. And so they can pull that trigger, you know? So.
Well, when you look at, okay, so it sounds like empowerment, relying on creativity, having some resilience. I've heard that from your series. Are there any other core principles that really kind of jump out at the reader?
The main theme of the whole story is family and the importance of family. So I have these, you know, high octane, born identity meets James Bond meets Narnia, you know, fast paced series of 12-year-olds that have read book one in 5 hours, right? So it's a great, fun, exciting series. But if you were to ask me what's the number one theme, it's family. And it's the core of the whole series, of the importance of family, what family means. And it's not just by birth and blood. It's by people that come into your life that are willing to sacrifice their life or help you or risk getting caught or doing something that become your family. And that's just kind of been the theme through this whole story. Meanwhile, Tom's trying to find his family. You know, he's an orphan. In book one, you know, he's been an orphan his whole life, and he finds out that his family might be alive. Can you imagine that? Like, wow. And so that's one of the main themes. Obviously, friendship is a big one. Loyalty, courage is a huge one. You know, having the courage and the gumption to step up and do things. So I think those are kind of some of the pillars in it that kids are learning. But again, it's not courage with a wand, you know, or my superpowers. Yes, I know that those superheroes over there are more super than I am, but I'm willing to fly out and you know what I mean? Like, give me a break. You know what I mean? So again, disconnect from reality. So I think those are kind of some of the core principles. We can definitely dig deeper. But I think it's fun too, because I'm opening up a real world to kids, like in England, and then book two is in France, book three is in Italy, book four is in Eastern Europe and Russia, book five will be in Asia. Book six will be in South America, Ooh. And then book seven will be the United States. And Tom and Sarah grow by 1 year in every book. So book one, they're 12, book two, they're 13, book three, they're 14, which is fun for me too, because especially at that age, and we can remember back, like the difference between 12 and 13 is like a decade, right? And the difference between 12 and 14 is like two decades at that age, you know, 35 to 36, who cares, right? 12 to 13, big deal. And so, you know, and so they're growing and they're maturing and they're learning. And that's what's kind of fun about book three, because I'm being as authentic and real. But Tom and Sarah are now 14. They've gone through a lot. They've had a bit of training, if you will, and they're kind of going out on their own in book three, but they're making a lot of mistakes. You know what I mean? And it's kind of funny, you know, and there's some great dry humor through the whole series. So
what about elements of spirituality? Is there anything there that comes up for these
characters? There is. Yeah. And book two introduces it. And again, too, I'm just writing great stories. Audience is global. You know what I mean? I mean, there's no one out there that wouldn't necessarily enjoy this series. But with that said, from my own beliefs and background, it works its way in very natural. And I think we start to touch on that in book two, and then it carries out through book three and four. And we know that especially book two, that Tom and Sarah become very aware that there's something out there that's looking after them. And there's a great bookend with this monk that they meet and at the beginning of book one, and at the end I actually quote Ephesians 6. He quotes it, and it's like we don't wrestle against you know, flesh and blood, and so it's kind of cool. I mean, it's like I actually have a biblical verse at the end of book two, and again, I'm not preaching to the choir. That's not the agenda. It's very much like C.S. Lewis, you know what I mean, in Narnia, you know, it's the analogies and stuff, but it's all in there. In fact, we even have a faith-based study for book one, put it that way. So it's all there, but it's not like hammered into your face and stuff. So it's definitely got that element.
Yeah, I'm wondering why the mainstream media hasn't reached out to you with the popularity, and it's for kids. I'm surprised they haven't. Do you think maybe the subtle content there is a disinhibitor for some of the mainstream?
But put it this way, why would they? Because this is the thing about the news that you need to understand. If they're following it, they own it, right? I can't even believe CNN is still around. But if CNN is covering the story, they own it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's an agenda. And so Briefing on the Lost Crown, that's not one of ours. That's not from us. right? That didn't come from one of our major publishers. That didn't come from one of our, that didn't come from the Tavistock Institute, right? That's not one of ours. And so like, why would they cover me, you know? And so I think eventually it'll splash onto the mainstream in the sense that it's become so popular that they might want to address it for 5 minutes. What is this whole Britfield thing? Oh, blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. Boom. We did our thing. Check that off. Let's get back to our agenda. But again, if I'm not part of their club, so they won't include me in their club. That's why you have like 50, I think Mel Kay says this, but you only have 50 actors, you know, that are doing movies in Hollywood. Isn't that the truth? It's like the same, it's usual suspects. It's the same actors because they're part of the club and they're the ones that are always getting the big roles. They're the ones that are out there saying, wear your mask. You know what I mean? They're the ones out there saying, I really believe in this organization. It's like, you know, and it's like, give me a break, you know. So they're all part of the club, and I'm not part of the club, never will be part of the club. In fact, you know, we're the majority, we're on the right side, you know, and I just look, I'll watch my words, but anyway,
you know, last night I did a live stream with my audience, and one of the themes was, what's it like to live in a police state? Because this is relatively new territory for our people. Sure. It's been emerging for a while. I think the Patriot Act was the big step, but
it was, yeah.
We have emerged into this now where we're really in a police state, and how far we go, we'll have to see. But I told the people, I said, you know, you have a whole different genre in front of you. You have to decide in this new paradigm, you know, what your role in this is going to be. And you have to look at long-term consequences and short-term benefits. When you told me that you had this James Bond style character pursuing these children because they were being outside the norm, is there that theme there of how to resist authoritarianism? Am I picking up on that?
Yeah, and it's quite interesting. I mean, I haven't had a really deep interview in a while, just on, you know, on the book, and which is great. I'd love to get into it, but I mean, you could spend. Britfield and Lost Crown Book One is designed to be taught in the classroom. We have an 83-page study guide based on national standards. It's already being taught. It's already being taught in hundreds of schools across the nation. We're already in thousands of schools across the nation. You could spend an entire semester just on Britfield and Lost Crown. Everything from Weatherly and what it represents up north to the fact that the kids spend all day, you know, producing products like baskets and tables that the Grievouses can take into town and sell. And the place is called the factory. That's what the kids call it. You know, and again, you can go back to the 19th century factory, industrial revolution. You know what I mean? Like, you can spend all day on this kind of stuff. Yeah. So I all those, it's very, very layered, you know, on the surface, exciting, fun, fast paced, but I mean, you can dig into any of it. And so you're catching on some of that, you know, it's interesting too, because unfortunately for the orphans, their whole impression of adults is that adults are sort of bad. And it's not, I don't state it in that way, but it's just been the people that they've been, you know, used to, except this one cook, who slips the kids extra food and some snacks and apples and cheese, like all that stuff's forbidden from Weatherly. But once they get out of Weatherly, the first person they bump into, it's really a great scene, and it's in the movie, and it's really important, is, you know, because they're trying to get to the train station 4 miles away to get a train to London. Why London? Why not? Right? The greatest city in the world. And so that's kind of their goal, and they're cold and it's starting to rain. And this older gentleman, this little cottage, sees them and gives them a break and says, you guys look, you know, like you could use something to eat. Gives them this hot bowl of soup, gives them a couple new sweaters that his sister knits him, you know, kind of oversized. And says, I'll give you a ride to the train station, gives Tom a, you know, 10-pound note and says, take care of Sarah and, you know, good luck or Godspeed. And it's a simple scene, but it is so powerful, of that sort of serendipity, or that good spirited of people. And they kind of bump into people along the way that step in, and we're all like that. We've given to others, and I myself have been so grateful for those that have stepped in when I've needed it, you know. And it's a wonderful balance, you know. When you're in the position to give or help, you do, and when you need help, you know, God be praised, you know, someone comes in. And so that theme is through the whole story, that, you know, there are good people out there, and there are people that are willing to risk everything to help and stuff. So.
You know, it's interesting. The late Dr. Wayne Dyer, a tremendous psychologist, he had a theme that he said that when you're living your life on purpose and living your life according to core principles, the right people magically show up in your life. In other words, you create your own momentum.
Sure.
And that's what I'm hearing here in this. There's a lot of interesting psychological principles. If you were to take the book and you have the study guide, I'm going to ask a different question that's probably not in the study guide. What kind of themes that I typically cover, or Doug or Ted cover, are present in this book? What kind of subjects do these kids
Oh,
get
right off,
exposed to?
yeah, right off the bat. I mean, everything from, because it's very interesting, because the conspiracy gets big with with Britfield, but from the very short period of time, it's the illegal orphanage, you know, meaning they've taken the Grievouses have taken over this orphanage, and they're getting paid by the state a certain
Ooh.
amount of money as long as they maintain a certain amount of orphans, and they're supposed to obviously provide them with, you know, good food
Is
and
this a criticism of CPS?
there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that on the very, that's not a low level, but that on that smaller level, to all the way up to the prime minister, that you find out, I don't want to give anything away, that might be involved with the Britfield had one son, and he was kidnapped 10 years ago, you know,
Okay.
as book one comes out. And because he was the last line of the Britfields, last bloodline, you know what I mean? And so as Gowerstone is starting to find things out and come closer to it, and he's good friends with the prime minister. They both went to Eton, and they both went to Christ Church, Oxford. And then you get into the bigger political realm. It has huge stuff. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, there's Windsor, and they crash land the balloon at Windsor. Now Haynesworth, who they meet Professor Haynesworth at Oxford College, and he's this kind of stuffy professor, and they're being chased, you know, at Oxford because they crashed their balloon there, and they're running and knocking on, you know, and they're out of places to go, and all of a sudden, like, Haynesworth is leaving for, you know, to get some fresh air, and he bumps into him, and Tom's holding Sarah because she strained her ankle, and you know, he's like, "What do you want?" He's like, "Well, get her to the hospital." It's like, "I ain't well," and he sees like the cops looking around, and they're looking for you, and "Yes, sir." And it's like, "What's going on? What's a complicated story?" And, you know, and so finally, like, Haynesworth decides, after hearing Tom's compelling story of growing up at Weatherly, to help them get to London. And it's a beautiful transition from a narrow-minded, overworked, never had a vacation, hating my life, you know, older gentleman, that to decide, you know what, I'm going to get you no matter what it takes. I'm getting you to London. And so that's a huge transition in his life. He becomes the father figure for Tom and Sarah, and for him, he's like, you know, back and forth. And then there's so they crash land at Windsor, and luckily Philip, who's the superintendent of Windsor, was a student of Haynesworth. And so it's like, oh my gosh. And it's great. And it's like, it's a great contrast too. It's my favorite scene actually in the whole book. But of Weatherly Orphanage and the freezing cold and the dripping ceiling and the wafer thin blankets, to spending the night at Windsor, you know, and having this gorgeous room, new set of clothing, best meal they've ever had. But all of a sudden, when Tom brings up Britfield and Haynesworth is talking about it, Philip starts to get very agitated, and so boom, you start to bring this in, this thread. And it's like, what's, I don't, again, I want to be very careful not to give anything away, but it's like, you talk about themes. Are you kidding me? It's everything. It's everything right now. I've literally pulled the curtain, like the Windsor dynasty. That's been a fake dynasty from day one. It's German. And what they've done and what they've usurped. I mean, you go to England, and honestly, when you talk to the people in England, they hate the Windsors. They always have. There's a very small majority. Again, it's all flash over substance. Oh my gosh, millions of people come out to see them. No, they're not. You know what I mean? Like, they know who they are. They know what they are. They know what they've done. So no, I touch on all of that. You know what I mean? I really start to challenge narratives, put it that way. So I think impossible. You know, it was all subconsciously done with book one, but it's like listening to your show and Hagman and everyone else, you know, getting all this information, learning, doing my own research, that just sort of filtered into the story. But in a very nonchalant way, you know, it wasn't my agenda. I wasn't trying to drive it. It wasn't the narrative of the story, but it's there, and it's foundational. It's huge. There's so many themes in it that you can. And I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to enlighten people that they start to question the narrative. And you're seeing that now, as I said, since 2020, for the first time, people are starting to challenge things, right?
True.
For the first time, how many millions of people aren't going out and getting a toxic flu shot? Oh, gotta get my flu shot. Hey, it's free at CVS. Are you kidding me? You have no idea what's in that thing, you know? So, anyway.
No, I hear what you're saying, and I tell you, I can't wait till the movies come out. How far apart are they going to be released, you know?
Yeah, I'm hoping it'll be interesting because we're close to finalizing the team. And when I say close, it could be 3 to probably 3 months. You know what I mean? Finalizing the team and stuff. But I've got the third draft of the movie script. We've got a major studio. I've got the producers. We've got the business plan. We've got all sort of our selected potential actors and some of the directors that we're looking at. So a lot of it depends on that team. But ideally, I think. Two things. One is I think it could be at the minimum, it would be every 2 years. It could be every 18 months, depending on how fast it moves. Because you have to keep in mind, too, what's great about the Britfield movies, number one, is that it does take in present time. And so you're not like, you don't have like expensive costuming. You don't have like James Bond movies where you're traveling around the world, right? We're shooting this scene in Prague and we're shooting this scene. You know what I mean? Like you're all over the world. You have huge, stunts with car chases and the helicopter. You know what I mean? And we don't, you know what I mean? It's a fast-paced adventure series and it's exciting, but it's in some ways it's very simplistic to set up and shoot. And book two's in France. And so to me, it's a dream job for the director of the team. It's like, okay, we're shooting in England, and then next year we're gonna be in France, and then we're gonna be to Italy. It's like, are you kidding me?
No,
This
it's expensive. I tell you, it puts me in the mind, and I've been here like three or four times in our conversation. When I was in seventh grade, we watched Great Expectations,
Oh.
and we read the book, and then we watched the movie, and it captured my imagination. And you kind of put me in that mindset. I know it's not exactly the same, but I'm in that mindset. It's kind of a Great Expectations start type of story.
I love that. That's frankly my favorite book of Dickens.
Mine
If
too. Mine
you were
too.
to say, if you were to say who is my most influential writer, it's Dickens, Charles Dickens. And what is Britfield the line closest to? Charles Dickens. And because of if you think of all the authors, Dickens was the one that was writing in real time, real events, real characters, real places, real people. And so we're different in many ways and fast paced and everything. But I was hugely influenced by Charles Dickens and Jane, a little bit of Jane Austen. I love her. And then the Brontes, Wuthering Heights, Jane Eyre. There's a reason it starts up in Yorkshire, Northern England. You know what I mean? And so it's kind of a shout out to that whole gothic feel to it and stuff. But yeah, it is. It's that kind of just and I myself, like I was hugely influenced by The Mouse on the Motorcycle and Runaway Ralph. That was Beverly clearly. And then James and the Giant Peach rocked my world when I was young. I just loved that book by Roald Dahl and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And then I will never forget, at 10 years old on Christmas on television watching Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And that was one of the pivoting moments that changed my life. And it's funny, it was that end scene in Willy Wonka where they're in the elevator and they crash through the ceiling and they start floating around the rooftops of England. And if you look, behind me, Dave, you can actually see it with the balloon,
I see that. Yeah.
flying over the rooftops of the little red tile roofs. And I think and the big orange thing, kind of a shout out to James the Giant Peach. But I think those books just stuck with me, resonated with me. And then I'll be honest, 1977 Star Wars, that rocked my world,
Me too.
And
That made a big impression on me too. Well, we're just about out of time, so I want you to tell people how they can follow your good work, get a copy of what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. You can check us out at Britfield, Britfield, Britfield.com. That's our website, award-winning website, over 400 pictures of England. So if you're reading book one or teaching it at homeschool or classroom, you can get a signed copy from that. And I'll be doing that just for a little bit longer. So it's kind of fun. I sign every book that's purchased through there, bookmarker, and we have specials and things like that. Or just Amazon or any other major platforms you can get Britfield. So yeah,
Wow,
that's the best way to
what
do it.
creative work. This is so phenomenal. I don't do a lot of author interviews. I do a
Sure.
few. I do a few. I've
Sure.
never done something like this. It's not your typical theme either. Like Hunger Games, there's only empowerment through one character, and the rest everybody just falls into being. And I
Sure.
suppose that the Hunger Games sends the message you can be like her. But I like the approach you're taking. There's so many different things for kids to draw on and for parents to use as a teaching tool. If I was homeschooling, we'd be using your books. I mean,
Yeah,
we
that's great. It's great for homeschooling. I was just asked the other day on an interview, and we love the homeschool movement, and we're huge supporters of the homeschool curriculum and ideology and also for parents that are thinking about it, doesn't necessarily mean that one parent has to stay home. There's so many options and alternatives today to homeschooling. You could drop them off at a homeschool group instead
Right.
of one of the institutions and stuff. And I have no personal stock in it. I myself was not homeschooled, but when you see a model work and you see a model that's as close to the way that education should be and how children should be raised, love the homeschoolers. So.
No, you're absolutely right. There's no agenda alien to the family being forced upon these children. And you know, it's interesting too. If what they were doing in a lot of these schools was healthy for kids, why would they keep it from the parents? That's
Exactly.
yeah, exactly. Hey, well, this has been fun, Chad. I really appreciate
Thank
you
you.
coming on, and I
Sure.
can't wait for the movies to come out, and I'll be in attendance. So thanks for joining us
Absolutely.
here on the Common Sense Show.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Take care.